Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, thanks for joining. Before we get started, please make sure that you have subscribed to the various platforms we're publishing on, here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube, the written stuff on Substack, as well as the quick takes that we put out on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what is being published, make sure you're giving us that big thumbs up. Make sure you're giving us that big five-star rating. Helps out with all the algorithms. We're going to continue the discussion here, looking at how we can go about integrating the functional exercises that we discussed previously in terms of what are functional exercises. And how we can integrate those functional exercises into our normal exercise routine, or how we can go about doing functional exercises without actually having any need to go to the gym in order to do the functional exercises. So when we look at these functional exercises, what we're basically looking at is looking at the types of exercises that we can do that is going to not only allow us to become healthier, but will provide us with the background to be able to be independent, the background to increase our performance, the background to optimally be able to perform in whatever tasks we have to do. A lot of times we start looking at these functional exercises, we have in mind this idea that we're going to become bigger, we're going to become stronger, but that's not really what functional exercises is all about. Remember, the functional exercise that we're looking at is how can we utilize the physics of our body in order to ensure that we are stable in whatever type of basic support we might have and in any type of movement that we might have in whatever plane, anatomical plane, we're moving in. And so let's go ahead and let's talk about how we can integrate functional exercises into our everyday exercise routines.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
To step back to the previous discussion, what we have to remember is that how do we go about developing functional exercises in our training routine? The best way to do this is to look at what types of tasks do we have to do in order to complete our normal everyday living. What types of tasks do we have to do in order to perform in whatever type of athletic event we might be participating in? In order to do this, we have to perform what's referred to as a needs analysis. That is, we have to figure out what do we need to do and what are we capable of doing right now. For this needs analysis, what we have to do is we have to look at several types of factors within our overall level of performance. We have to look at what is our muscular strength. We have to look at what is our muscular endurance. We have to look at what is our range of motion that we happen to have within the various. We have to look at what is my ability to coordinate between the various parts of my body so that I'm able to perform what I need to perform. We have to look at what is my aerobic fitness, what is my metabolic fitness. We have to look at what is the actual desired outcome that we want to achieve. All of that needs analysis does is it allows me to establish what is the functional ability that I happen to have and what is the functional deficits I need to overcome. Based on my functional analysis, I'm able to determine what types of exercises need to get integrated into my exercise in order to allow me to have improvements in my overall functionality. And this is where if we start looking at a lot of what gets put out on social media, on YouTube, in our algorithms about exercise and getting better. A lot of times we get presented with all of these kind of fitness programs, fitness plans that simply talk about progressive overload and progressive overload and progressive overload. Or we talk, or we see presentations about increasing tone, making your body look more toned, increasing or elongating your body, increasing, elongating your muscles. Some of those are oxymoronic. Some of those are not actually beneficial for us functionally. And that deals with that whole metabolic functionality, range of motion functionality, and my ability to have coordinated action. When we start looking at the functional training that we're going to be doing, what we're going to be attempting to do is attempting to allow for full ranges of motion in stable platforms. That is full ranges of motion within both a closed chain as well as an open chain movement. That is where we're going to be able to move our body through space and move our limbs through space so that we're able to be able to do whatever we need to do without having any difficulty or without increasing the chance for having types of injuries come about, muscle strains, ligament sprains, where we're able to protect ourselves, where we're able to increase our overall level of performance, where we're able to prepare ourselves for whatever we need to do. This is where we start looking at what comes out of that functional assessment. That functional assessment is going to involve me doing various types of activities that I need to do, but do it in such a way that I'm either being observed or set up a way for me to observe myself. That is, I'm going to either be recording myself doing what I need to do, or I'm going to have somebody look at me while I'm doing it. And what we're going to do is we're going to look for deficits. We're going to look for places where I don't have as much strength as I should, places where I get stuck, places where I'm unable to safely and effectively move through space in order to move around, so that I know what I have to do in order to improve. Based off of the fitness and functional analysis, we're able to improve ourselves. And the way in which we're able to improve ourselves is based off of looking at how we can go about exercising in such a way so we're not going to isolate movements, but we're going to use complex compound movements. That is, we're not going to move in single planes of motion or have force development, have strength being shown in single muscle groups or single muscles. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be progressing through challenges within the exercise routine that's going to involve multiple muscles and multiple muscle groups working in multiple planes with a variety of center of mass, center of gravity relative to my base of support in a closed chain position, as well as angulation of attack, that is how I'm moving the limb through space in an open chain fashion. We're also going to be dealing with exercise where we're going to be progressive in our overload, but also progressive in our speed of movement. What we have to remember is that there's certain types of exercises that we want to work in a controlled fashion, but then there's also certain types of exercises that we want to work in a explosive action. So if I want to get up out of a chair, I don't want to move slow and controlled. I actually want to move rather quickly and explosively. One of the reasons why older individuals tend to have problems, put quotes around that, getting out of chairs or getting up off of the toilet is because they are not recruiting muscles in such a way to provide an explosive action. And so if I want to be able to control my downward motion into a chair, but also be able to get up out of that chair, then I want to work in a controlled fashion in the negative part of a closed chain exercise, but then work explosively in the concentric or the positive side of that same closed chain exercise. If I have to worry about getting up off of the ground. I want to be able to do this in a single limb position, where I'm going to be putting one foot flat on the ground while the other one's going to be, well, the other limb is going to be bent, so that I'm almost like in a lunge position, or if you want to think about it in terms of religious thing, in a genuflection position, where I'm going to have a knee on the ground and a foot on the ground and be able to propel my body up off the ground. And so if we start looking at some of the functional exercises that we can do, let's talk about this based off of doing a split routine where we're going to be doing, say, upper body exercises one day, lower body exercises the next day. And then we'll look at functional exercises as relates to core stability, what people like to think about as their trunk. And so what are some of the lower body functional exercises that we can do? Well, let's start by dealing with a double limb stable base of support. That is, we're going to have both feet on the ground, and we're going to be moving in an up-down fashion. We're not going to be using machines, we're going to be using our body. In this, we have two avenues of approach. We can do this without needing any type of apparatus, without needing any type of gym equipment. What people like to think about as being calisthenics. Or we can do this based off of being in the gym needing equipment. Regardless of whether we're going to be dealing with equipment or not, the first type of exercise that's going to be functional in this avenue of lower extremity exercise is simply going to be a squat. We're going to progress this squat. The first type of squat that we're going to be doing is what's referred to as, well, I like to refer to as a sit-stand squat. That is, I'm going to have some sort of bench or some sort of chair a couple inches behind my legs, and I'm simply going to squat down until the backside of my legs and or my gluteals touch the chair, at which point in time I'm going to stand back up. I'm not going to stop in the seated position, but I'm going to lower down until I feel that chair, and then I'm going to stand back up. If we want to work on this in such a way so as to progress and control that downward motion, what I'm going to do is I'm going to work in a prolonged negative phase, a prolonged downward phase. And I'm going to start this prolonged downward phase with a very, very high chair. That is a chair that is higher than what I would normally be seated in. And I'm going to progress down. I'm going to progress down in a 6 to 10 count. So as I progress down, I'll start counting. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Touch, stand back up in a 1 to 2 fashion. And I'll be doing that for somewhere around 3 to 4 repetitions on that cadence with a 30 second to 60 second break after the 3 to 4 reps. Using that cadence, I'm then going to lower the chair down a little bit, and I'm going to continue. I'm going to repeat. And I'll repeat that downward motion, this time with a chair that is an inch or two lower than what it was previously. Once again, progressing down. This time, instead of doing a 10 count, I'll do an 8 count. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Touch and back up on a 1 to 2 count. That type of functional exercise in terms of a sit-stand squat, we can progress. And we can progress two ways. First way is by progressively lowering the seat until it is below the height that I would normally sit in. So if I'm normally sitting in an 18 or 20 inch high chair, I'm going to progress downwards to, say, like a 12-inch. In this case here, I probably won't be using a chair. I'll probably be using either a step or some sort of box as my reference target. If we're in the gym, we happen to use like the weight bench, that's usually around 16 to 18 inches in terms of height. If we're at the park, where it depends upon the height of the bench, you can be anywhere from 16 inches or so up to about 24 inches or so. And so we're going to be utilizing different types of box heights, different types of seat heights, progressing in a fashion so that we're getting lower and lower and lower. And as I get lower, I'm going to truncate the time that it takes me to get down into that squat, working 2 to 3 heights and then progressing. And as I progress, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start the next time I do the sit stand at the lowest height that I used previously. And so if I start off at say like 24 inches, and I go 24 inches, 22 inches, 20 inches, the next progression will go 20 inches, 18 inches, 16 inches. And we have to do this in such a way so that we're able to comfortably and controllingly get into the proper touch position on the box, on the chair, without flopping. And that's the key here, without flopping. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to control that downward motion so that we don't just flop back into the seat. Now, on the opposite end of that, the other side of this functional exercise is going to be the get up. In the get up, I'm going to start at low height, and I'm going to progressively go lower and lower and lower, or I'm going to progressively weigh myself more and more and more. So I'm going to add weight, or I'm going to go lower. All depends upon what is my functional range of motion. This is where we get an old adage that is not as true as what we thought it was back in the day, and that is we don't want the knees over the toes when we do squats, because it somehow would cause excessive strain on the knees. But when we start looking at the biomechanics of how we go about squatting, it's not about the knees relative to the toes. It's about the parallelity, how parallel my torso is to my shin, to my tibia bone. What we want to make sure that we're doing is that as we're going down into the squat and as we're coming up from the squat, we want to make sure that the angle of the torso, the angle of my chest, is going to be the same as the angle of my shin relative to the ground. And so as long as I'm staying parallel in between my shin and my chest, I'm not going to put undue stress, undue strain on my knees doing the squatting exercise. The other thing we want to do is we want to look at what is my foot placement. We want to make sure that I have all of my toes pressing into the ground and my heel pressing into the ground when I'm doing these exercises. Once again, this is about functionality, not necessarily about some sort of growth or some sort of weird abnormal adaptation we're trying to get for some sort of athletic performance or some sort of cosmetic aesthetic performance. Or we're not trying to get excessive growth in some specific type of muscle. We're simply trying to get the muscles to coordinate with themselves in such a way that we're functionally better than we were the day before. And so we have this progression within our squats, where coming up off of the bottom, we're going to try to move as fast as possible. The faster I'm able to move, the more muscle I'm going to be recruiting in that motion. And so what we're going to try to do is we're trying to be as powerful as we can be coming up from the bottom on these squats and as controlled as possible going down into the squat. And then what we're going to do is we're then going to progress from the two-footed squats towards a one-footed squat, or sometimes referred to as a split stance squat. And there's different ways of doing the split stances. There's different ways of doing the one-legged stances. And what we're doing here is we're challenging our base of support and our ability to control our center of mass around the base of support. Once again, working from the standing to the seated position, and then from the seated position to the standing position. Working from being unweighted to being weighted. So our progression in terms of this lower body exercising is to go from 2 foot to 1 foot. And we're going to do this in such a way that we're going to go from squatting to doing one-legged squatting. In that one-legged squatting, we can do a whole bunch of different variants. And the variants that are out there include things like split stance, variants like lunges, or for some people who want to do the challenging aspect of these squats, which include the pistol squats. Now, some people say, well, I have to hold my child and get down into a low ground position in order to play with that child, but I have to carry the child down to the ground with me. I want to do this in such a way that I can control it, so I want to move a leg into a pistol position in order to do this. The problem with that is that you can't start off doing the pistol squats if you intend to teach the muscles how to recruit themselves in such a way that you're going to be able to maintain your stability with additional weight of the child and the need to create a stable platform for the protection of yourself and the child. In this case here, what you'll do is instead of doing weights on your body, you'll do weights around your body. This is where you'll be holding onto weights. This is where you can do things like goblet squats or kettle squats. This is where you can do dumbbell squats, where you're holding the masses where you'll be holding the child. Once again, starting off with two-legged stance, doing the controlled version into the down position. In this case here, since you're trying to get all the way down to the ground, trying to get as low as possible. But in order to do that, you first have to work on range of motion into that excessively low position. You have to make sure that you have flexibility within the muscles that are around the ankle. You have to make sure you have flexibility in the muscles that are around the knee, flexibility in the muscles that are around the hip, but not so much flexibility that you lose the stability that is necessary in order to maintain the stable platform that is necessary for you to be able to get into those positions. In order to do this, one of the better ways to work on this is instead of working from top down, work from down top. So what you'll do is you'll start off on the ground in a seated position and then work into a kneeling position, and then from a kneeling position into a standing position. By doing that, you're working backwards, but you're working backwards, allowing yourselves to get into the most compromised position, and then work through the most compromised position into the least compromised position, based off of need for range of motion and need for stability in the joints that are going to be involved with the motion. Along with doing the squats, the other thing we have to think about is within activities of daily living, picking things up off the ground. This is where some people say, oh, I don't want to deadlift because it's going to hurt my back, but I have to pick up my kid off the floor. Well, when you pick up your kid off the floor, you're deadlifting. Or if you have to pick up the bag of groceries, you're deadlifting. Or if you pick up the box, you're deadlifting. Or if you pick up your book bag, you're deadlifting. All of those activities are deadlifts. We just don't think about them as deadlifts. And so what we want to do is we want to start off by making sure that, once again, just like with doing our squats, our torso, our chest, and our shins are moving in parallel with each other, which means that as I bend the knee and the hip, the angle of the shin and the angle of my chest mirror each other. They align with each other so that I'm not putting undue stress on my hip, on my ankle, or on my knee, and I'm able to transition the forces through the body so that I'm not putting undue stress on any point in the body. Progressing from just doing our everyday pickup activities, we will then work towards loaded deadlifts. The loaded deadlifts start, and this is where a lot of people will go and just jump in and grab the Olympic bar. if we're going to do this functionally, we want to just want to make sure that we're moving through the entire range of motion that we need for our everyday activities. And the Olympic bar is a great tool. The barbell is a great tool for lifting. However, it's not going to allow me to get the range of motion that I might need in order to meet the demands functionally for everyday activities or for athletic events. This is where doing dumbbells or kettlebells can be a better option for doing the deadlifts, because it's going to allow me to move through a greater range of motion, a range of motion that's going to more mimic what I have to do on a regular basis in order to perform the activities that I need to perform. Now, we may not be able to get the maximum amount of muscle growth this way. We may not be able to produce the maximum amount of overload this way. But that's not really the point of doing the functional side of these exercises. The functional side of these exercises, or the functional side of these exercises, is about meeting the functional demands that we have for our everyday activities or for doing whatever we have to do athletically or performancely. And so we're not really looking at trying to get the maximum amount of hypertrophy, the maximum amount of growth. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make the body as functionally stable as it can be and allow for optimal amount of range of motion with optimal amount of strength and force development for that transference from what we're doing in the exercise realm to what we have to do on everyday activities. Staying with the lower body, what we have to start doing is we have to start progressing, not just from 2 foot base of support to 1 foot base of support, but go from having a stable base of support to a compliant base of support. So when we start saying compliant base of support, what we're saying is we're saying a base of support that is in motion, that is not solid. This is where we progress from being on the hard floor to working on, say, a cushion, to working with a wobble board or a Bosu ball, where the stability of the foot and ankle starts to get compromised. And this is where we have to go back and look at our kinematic chain, which remembers that anything in our lower body, in terms of force production, in terms of transference of the strength of the muscle into actual mechanical force and movement, is the transference of those forces to the ground and the ground back to the body in order to allow for movement to occur. Remember, the physics laws equal and opposite forces, and that's what we're dealing with here. We're transferring the strength that's being produced in the muscles into the ground in mechanical force that's going to get transferred back to us by the ground. And so by changing the compliance of the surface, by changing the stability of the surface, we start having to incorporate stabilizing movement, stabilizing moments in terms of the physics, stabilizing muscle contractions that will allow for us to keep our base of support stable around our center of mass and around our center of gravity so that we're able to have the appropriate movements taking place. And so as I progress and as stuff starts to getting easier and as I become more functional in terms of the transference of what I'm doing in my exercises to what I'm going to do in terms of real life stuff, what I want to start doing is I want to start looking at, okay, instead of just doing it on the ground, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do it on a wobble board. And this is where I'll start with 2 foot on the wobble board and I'll start doing my sit stand squats and eventually get rid of the box in terms of the reference point and just start doing wobble board squats. And I'll go from 2-footed squats to 1-footed squats. What I'll start noticing is that when I make this transition, my range of motion becomes compromised. My ability to move as deep as I was able to move prior gets less. And that's because I have to stabilize my body and learn how to stabilize my body on this surface that is not stable. And so people will start thinking, oh, I'm cheating the range of motion. But you're not cheating the range of motion. What you're doing is you're working through how do I stabilize the body as I move through space in an environment that is compromised relative to a very stable environment. And so we'll progress from doing the squatting techniques to doing the single leg squatting techniques to doing the deadlifting techniques. Once again, working with weights that are going to mimic what I'm going to be doing in terms of real life stuff, starting with body weight and then adding weight to my body as I progress. Making sure that the platform is going to be able to support my body weight plus whatever I happen to be adding to my body weight as I progress through. Once again, remember not focusing so much on the idea of getting muscles to grow as big as possible, but getting and gaining that strength through a variety of ranges of motion, through a variety of planes of motion, through a variety of compromised positions so that I'm able to have transference of what I'm doing in the gym to what I'm doing outside in the real world environment. So our functional exercises in our lower body segments will be those deadlifts, those squats, the single leg squat variants, whether it be a lunge or a split stance or a pistol. Variances of the deadlifts, which includes just the standard deadlift to the RDL deadlift, the Romanian deadlift, to, and I don't really recommend this as a functional side of it, to a good morning or to a stiff leg deadlift, mainly because those last two, the good mornings and the stiff leg, while it does help us in terms of hinge action, that is flexion extension at the hip, most of what we do functionally is not standalone flexion extension at the hip, but is a combination of flexion extension at the hip with the knee and with the ankle in what's referred to as triple flexion, triple extension. That is, the hip, knee, and ankle will all flex together as we go down. The hip, knee, and ankle will all extend together as we come up. We very rarely are doing a lot of simple hinge action at the hip. However, if you are doing things where you have to reach across in order to grab something and pull something towards you, doing some of those exercises, doing those good mornings, doing those stiff-legged deadlifts may be of benefit to you. However, I would change the angulation at which you are doing the pulls and possibly look at doing resistance band anchors instead of doing weights on those, if we're looking at trying to have transference from what we're doing in terms of exercise to what we're doing in real world conditions. As we move from the lower body to the upper body, a lot of the functional stuff that we see in the upper body is mainly a pushing activity. A lot of the functional stuff that we see in the upper body is pushing. Now, there's a lot of stabilization that takes place in terms of a pull, but mainly that pull is more what's referred to as scapular pull, that is retraction of the scapulas, retraction of our shoulder blades, pulling our shoulder blades back and together, like we're opening up our chest and pulling our shoulders back to make our chest look bigger and wider, if you're thinking about it in terms of that way. And so when we're looking at functional exercises in the upper body, a lot of those functional exercises in the upper body are going to be our push-up and our push-up variants, our planking activities, and our get-ups. There are other things that come into play when we start looking at our upper body in terms of functional, but I'm going to talk about those in terms of the torso activities. And so what are some of the functional exercises that we can start incorporating into our upper body activities? Well, we start off with our plank or our push-up position. And if we're not strong enough to keep ourselves up in a full plank position, we'll start off with what's referred to as hands and knees. And so hands and knees are sometimes referred to in terms of the therapeutic setting, quadruped position. And we'll start off in quadruped position and we'll start doing weight shifts. And in weight shifts, what we're doing is we're unweighting one limb and weighting the other limb. So we'll start off in quadruped. And what we'll do is we'll start to shift our body from our right side to our left side. And then from our left side back to neutral, so we have equal weight distribution. And then we'll go from that position onto our right side. And what the weight shifting is doing is it's coordinating muscle action around our shoulders, within our arms, within our chest, within our back, in such a way as that we're able to stabilize our torso and stabilize our upper extremities so that we're able to move our body weight around off of movement in the upper extremities. Once again, remember, a lot of what we're looking at here is we're looking at pushing exercises. And so we're going to start off with that quadruped, and we'll go from the quadruped simple weight shifts, and we'll slide our knees back and we'll slide our hands forward. So we're going to get into sometimes referred to as a wheelbarrow push-up position, or the old sexist term, the girly push-up position. And in that position, what we'll start doing is we'll start working on weight shifts, not just right side and left side, but forward and back. And as we come forward and back, we're going to work on flexion and extension at the shoulder, the elbow, and at the wrist. Once again, coordinating the action so that we're flexing all at the same time to lower the chest towards the ground, extending all at the same time in order to get the chest away from the ground. The reason why we're going to do this is because if we're looking at trying to become more independent, more mobile, we have to make sure we're able to get ourselves up off the ground if we happen to be older. If we're an athlete, we want to do is we want to make sure we're able to get off the ground as fast as possible. Because if we're on the ground, bad things happen if we're an athlete. If we're an older person, we don't want to spend too much time on the ground if we happen to have tripped and fall. We want to be able to get up off the ground and not become burdensome to somebody else. Part of the independence that we seek as an older individual is not just prevention of tripping and falling, making sure that we're strong in our lower body, functionally strong in our lower body, but also functionally strong in our upper body and through our torso in order to get ourselves up off the ground. And so a lot of these functional upper extremity exercises is not just functional strength in the chest and in the arms and in the back, but it's also functional strength within the torso. So we're going to work on that push-up position from that wheelbarrow position, from the knee position, into a plank position. So that's where we're going to come onto our toes. We're going to come onto our toes and we'll start with just simple plank hold, which refers to as an isometric contraction. And so what we'll do is we'll get into that kind of push-up position. And we're going to hold, and we'll try to hold for a count of 10. Or we're going to try to lower ourselves down on a count of 10. That negative reinforcer, the negative side of the contraction is going to act as a reinforcer for causing gains in strength. If we're not very strong to start with, instead of starting on the ground in our push-up progression, we'll start with our hands on a countertop, on a chair, or on a bench. And once again, this is all about physics. And it's all about the sum of forces and the angulation relative to the perpendicular line of gravity and what the muscles have to work against. Most push-ups, you're looking at most 70 to 80% of your body mass you're having to press in terms of getting yourself up off the ground. Based off of the angle that I am working at, I can be as low as 30% and as high as about 50% with my hands on an elevated surface. And so I'll start by simply just doing the standard push-up pressing position. And what I want is I want to make sure that I'm working all the way down, as far down as I possibly can. And as far down as I possibly can, I want to almost touch my chest to the ground. Now, anybody who's listening that happens to be in the Army nowadays knows that their push-up test is where they go all the way down, chest touches the ground, hands go out to the side, hands come back into push-up position, and they push back up in order to count for a rep of push-up. We're not going to do that here functionally. However, we want to be able to work to being able to do that so that should I happen to trip and fall, I'm able to get myself into that position and get myself up from the floor. And we'll start off by doing standard isometric to that down on 10 count. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Press up. And then repeat. And we want to work on not just control on the down and fast on the up, but we want to work on overwork overload here, not just mechanical overload in terms of strength in the upper extremity. This is where we want to not just look at how much additional weight beyond body weight I can do in the push-ups, but also the angulation that I'm going to be taxing the muscles at and how long I'm going to be doing those contractions. So we'll be doing things like standardized push-ups. We'll be doing push-ups where our hands are on benches. We'll be doing push-ups where our feet are elevated above our hands. This is going to increase the relative load, making instead of 60, 70%, we're looking at 75, maybe 80%, once again, depending upon the angulation that we're looking at in terms of feet above shoulders, but also looking at putting our hands on risers so that we're able to get lower than what we possibly could get if our hands happen to be on a flat, stable surface. Working on the standard push-ups, also working on weight shift push-ups, working on from doing a push-up to a pike push-up. So a pike push-up is where I basically have my gluteals pointed up above my head. And I'm doing a push-up where I'm coming head down into the ground, head back up away from the ground, where instead of being flat and moving my body up and down, I'm simply pressing in almost like a triangle position. Or if you think about a diver coming on the diving board when they talk about being in a pike position, where my hands and my feet are on the ground, but the spacing in between the hands and the feet are narrower than what they normally are, so that my gluteals are up towards the ceiling, up towards the sky if I'm going to be doing these outdoors. Going push-up to pike push-up, or doing weight shift push-ups, what some people refer to as doing Tyson push-ups, or doing rocker push-ups, where I'm rocking backwards and forwards as I'm doing my pressing. Where if I'm doing rocker push-ups and doing it where my toes are my focal point of movement, where I'm rocking up and down on my toes, so I'm coming forward on the down, back on the up, versus doing Tyson push-ups where I'm kind of in a small little bit of a crouch in that rocked position, where I have to make sure that my feet are braced against something so that I am going to push forward and down on the downward motion, and then I'm going to press up and come back on the up motion. The rocking is going to add some additional load to the activity, which is why we normally don't do our rocking push-ups very early in the progression. These are more later in progression in terms of activity. And just like when we were looking at with the lower body, we want to progress from being stable with our hands on the ground to having some sort of compliance of the ground. This is where we're going to be working with push-ups on wobble boards, planks on wobble boards, push-ups on Basu balls, push-ups where your feet are on the large gym or the Swiss balls, utilizing the various means by which you can suspend body from something using the TRY trainers or using some sort of strapping that can help out in terms of causing some sort of suspension where your body is held onto some sort of apparatus in a way that you are suspended from the ground, where your either hands are in the suspension unit or your feet are in the suspension unit. And what the compliance here is doing is it's just like with the lower body, It's requiring you to engage with stability and stabilizing the joints that are being moving. But at the same time, it's going to cause a little bit more stabilization around a highly dynamic joint, the shoulder joint, that we don't see in the lower extremity. Most of the stabilization is taking place in the lower extremity. It's going to be in and around the foot and ankle. And then at the hip, particularly where the hip and the back are meeting up, so as to make sure that we have a stable center of gravity around the base of support. We start looking at doing the upper body pressing activities, the pushing activities in a compliant or on a compliant surface. A lot of the stabilization is going to be taking place, not necessarily at the wrists, but more at the shoulders, in order to make sure that we are stable in such a way that we're able to perform the pressing or the pushing activity that can become compromised. Unlike what we saw with the lower extremity, when the upper extremity, when we're on these compliant surfaces, the range of motion is not going to be as compromised as what we saw with the lower extremity, lower body exercises, simply because the kinematic chain is already at a compromised position doing a lot of the gym activities that we ask the upper extremities to do, the upper body to do, when we're doing a lot of our pressing, a lot of our pushing activities. So we're not going to see huge changes in angulation, in the amount of range of motion that we get utilizing the compliant surfaces. It may become slightly more difficult to do. It may require a little bit more strength to do. But the compromise that comes into play when we start looking at compliant surfaces in the upper extremity, in upper body activities, is not going to be as much as when we see it in the lower body. Along with the presses, we're going to have some pull activities taking place. A lot of the pull activities taking place are going to be pulls that are going to allow for scapular stabilization, scapular retraction, that is movement of the shoulder blades, in particular movement of the shoulder blades in a down and in a backwards fashion. Once again, like opening up the chest. But also where we're going to be doing a lot of pulling into the center of the body. If we think about a lot of the activities that we might do, where we have a lot of pulling activity or pulling motion in the upper extremity, a lot of that pulling motion in the upper extremity is going to be combined with motion in the lower extremity, which we're going to get to here in a second. We start looking at torso movements or whole body movements, where we're going to be looking at stabilization of the torso, stabilization of the pelvis, stabilization of the abdomen in such a way that we're able to have proper motion, proper activity taking place. The principal activities that we're going to see in terms of our functional pulls are going to be our rows, our rowing activities. This is not going to be where we're in the machines doing seated rows. A lot of this is going to be more standing rows or standing pulls. A lot of this is going to be doing work against the body, doing pull-ups or doing inverted rows or archer rows, depending upon how you want to define it, where instead of looking at pulling on the vertical plane, we're going to be pulling on an angle to the vertical plane. So we'll be pulling on what's usually referred to as an oblique plane, where our feet are on the ground, we're holding onto a bar or onto rings that are above the ground, that we're not going to be pulling our feet up off the ground, but we're going to be pulling our torso up towards our hands. There's not a lot of progression that we see in the functionality of pulls independent of functional improvements within movements in the torso in terms of either added weight or in terms of level of difficulty. We don't see real compliance changes. However, we can go from having a static bar to lifting in or utilizing a suspension rig or utilizing rings for doing the pulling activities. The big functional exercises that we're going to see that have transference into what we do on an everyday basis, or what we might see being done if we happen to need athletic abilities, is going to be a combination of upper body and lower body. And there are a few types of functional exercises that we can do that are going to involve both upper body and lower body. And I like to think of these as functional exercises for the whole body or functional exercises for the torso. The primary ones are the carries. And there are multiple types of carries. Some people who follow a lot of the strongman competitions or have done any type of the CrossFit or similar style exercises have heard things like farmer's walks. That is where you're going to be holding weights or holding dumbbells in each hand and holding them and carrying them for a stated or specific distance. For training purposes, probably 10, 15 yards. Doing a lap of between 20 and 30 yards, taking 30 to 50 second rests in between. You can do suitcase carries or suitcase deadlifts, where instead of carrying weights in both hands, you're only carrying weight in one hand. What this is doing is this is causing a bit of rotational inertia that you have to stabilize the body in as you're doing the carry. Doing waiter carries. And so a waiter carry is where you're going to have a weight or a dumbbell in a hand on the shoulder while you're moving through space, while you're walking. Once again, about the same distance that you're looking at when you're looking at doing the farmer's walks. The big type of functional exercises that we can do that are torso whole body exercises are the lifts and the chops. When we're talking about lifts, what we're talking about is not just doing a deadlift, but doing a compound lift. So we're going to pick something up off the ground and bring it up to chest height, very similar to as if we're trying to lift a box to carry that box like we're doing a move, like we're moving somebody or moving ourselves or rearranging stuff around the house. We can take that lift, and if we add a rotation into it, it becomes a chop or becomes a throw, depends upon which direction you're looking at doing this. On a chop, we're going to come from the high point to the low point in a rotational downward motion. Usually these chops are done utilizing some sort of rubber bounce ball or weighted ball. Whereas a toss is usually done either with a weighted ball or with a dumbbell or some sort of weight where you're able to take the weight from the ground up and add a rotation to the opposite side. What you're doing in the carries, what you're doing in the lifts, and what you're doing in the chops is you're working on moving through space with an unstable center of mass, center of gravity. That is, the center of mass and center of gravity is rotating around your axis of support, your vertebrae. And what you have to do is you have to stabilize that rate of rotation. You cannot over-rotate, and you cannot allow for the angulation of the chest to the shin to come out of parallel. Once again, it's just like we talked about with the deadlift and with the squat. We want to make sure we're parallel in between our chin and our chest. And so as we're doing our rotations, what we want to make sure is that our chest is in a neutral position, our spine is in a neutral position, and the way we should do this is we do this by contraction of our abdominal musculature. And contraction of the abdominal musculature is going to allow us to have that rotational control of the body in such a way that we're able to move and move in a controlled fashion so that we're able to lift and rotate without causing harm to ourselves. Functional exercises are exercises that are going to allow us to improve our functionality, not necessarily going to allow us to have improved aesthetics, improved body composition, improved body image, even though we might get it as a secondary effect to the functional exercises. We're not going to see large amounts of muscle growth doing functional exercises, even though a lot of the big power movements that we do in the gym, the bench pressing, the deadlifting, the lateral pulldowns, the pull-ups, the deadlifts, have a functional component to it. And we can successfully overload those exercises to cause greater amounts of muscle growth. The idea of the functional exercise, the integration of the functional exercises, as we discussed here, is about transference of specific exercises from the gym into real-world scenario so that we're able to either improve our optimal performance, to reduce our relative risk for falls and for injuries as we go about doing what we have to do in our everyday activities. There is a lot more in terms of the integration that comes into play that is more on an individual basis, that is a person-by-person basis based off of what your functional analysis happens to be and what your training goals and outcomes are. If you'd like to discuss more about how you can specifically incorporate functional exercises and which functional exercises are best for you, please reach out to us. We're more than happy to discuss this with you in greater detail. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you got a little bit out of the discussion here. Please make sure you're giving us that big 5-star rating. Make sure you give us a big thumbs up. Sharing what we're producing with all of your friends and family. Making sure you've subscribed to the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The written stuff on Substack, as well as quick takes being posted onto Instagram and onto Threads. Stay tuned for more talks, more discussions on organization of your workouts and a talk on dietary supplements and the effectiveness of dietary supplements for gaining muscle mass, for losing body fat, and for improving overall health and performance.